Kevin. This is Jason. And as always, I have Gabe, the tool man, Gutierrez. Gabe, how you doing?
Doing fantastic, Jason. Let me tell you, I have become a master plumber in my years of homeownership.
Really? So that's what you've been doing over the Christmas break.
By master plumber, I mean that I am really not very good at plumbing at all, but somehow I've muddled my way through it through many trips to the hardware store. So I had to do this whole long, drawn-out repair job at my house on some plumbing that should have been a simple job, but just spiraled out of control. I was telling Jason about it. And I was going to and from the hardware store and making returns and purchases and returns and purchases. And at one of the times I was making a return, it was the same lady I was dealing with. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here again. And she's like, you know, it's okay. It's plumbing. With plumbing and electrical, a lot of times people have it takes a while to get it right. People make a lot of trips. And it was at those words that I found comfort and peace. I was like, oh, okay. I won't beat myself up so much. This is normal.
I mean,
it just takes time.
In all seriousness, this is one of those areas where if I had a middle school or high schooler that didn't know what they were going to do, those are two areas. And I say, if you can do plumbing or electrical or both, man, you can make bank now, because that's one of the lost traits.
It is. And for whatever reason, I'm not really intimidated much by plumbing projects, unless it's like, obviously, like I'm messing with a water main. Okay, that's a big deal.
Sure.
But I'm pretty open to tackling it and learning it and working my way through it. But electrical, man, I'm just the thought of getting something wrong there and starting a fire in my house. I'm like, it's okay. I'll call somebody, you know. But no, a lot of people, you know, even with the plumbing, they're just like, no, let's pick up the phone.
That's me.
So much more efficient and easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would not have had the experience.
I after hearing your story, I would have quit easily within an hour after I came back the first time and saw the mess beyond that. The moment they would said, yeah, just cut that pipe, I've been like, I'm out. All right, I'll call somebody to cut that pipe.
But
thank you.
See, Jason, I've leveled up. I've increased my skills.
Oh man. Well, obviously, listeners, you haven't come to listen to our DIY of our homes. You've come here to listen to Out of the Silent Planet. And Gabe, we made it. We've made it.
Kind of.
What?
Mostly.
It's the final chapter of the book.
That's true. But there's also that postscript.
Okay, so I'll just be full disclosure. I've already read the postscript. So.
Oh, dude, I did not.
You're a liar.
Well, we're only talking. Well, okay. Let me pull the curtain back here.
I've
read this book previously.
We've said this multiple times.
Right, of course. But it's now been, oh my goodness, I mean, maybe 6 months ago when I read this book. I've forgotten things. And so as I'm reading this book chapter by chapter, I'm not reading ahead. I'm reading it with everybody. And I'm surprising myself with some of the details I've forgotten. And so it's really been really wonderful to kind of relive this book and maybe taking it slow and being able to soak in the text, the details, the descriptions. I'm not just trying to plow through a book and knock it out in a short period of time. But, you know, I'm actually able to savor this chapter by chapter, which I love that so much about what we do here with Reading Your Way to Heaven, is that, you know, a lot of times when you're doing a book club, it is like, you know, you've got a certain period of time to read a book, and most people
wait until the final week.
That's right.
Like, oh yeah, that's right.
Hammer through it. So anyway, so on this second go round, I have not read the postscript, and I don't fully remember what it says.
Okay.
So
We can wait till next week, and we can have that be sort of the, like we talked about, I think last week, where we have a finale.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Wrap it all up.
Yeah.
So in chapter 22, the first thing that jumped out to me in this chapter was we're back to C.S. Lewis's old form. A nice, crisp, short chapter. Three pages, in and out, pst, you're good.
Yes and no. I suppose the form, yes, but the style, we're breaking the third wall here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I just meant as far as the length. Oh, sure, yeah, it just reminded me it back in the early chapters. Oh, yeah, for sure. The content within the chapter, there's two things with this. Number one, huge swerve. Like you said, just breaking the shattering that fourth wall. And then the second thing was, this felt like an epilogue, not a chapter.
It did, which surprises me that there is a postscript.
Yeah.
Given that there is this.
Maybe back in the day, like I guess in modern times, I would see this as an epilogue. And then what you have in the postscript would be an appendix for the book.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, nice, short, concise chapter, but definitely power-packed. If you remember, so we're talking about chapter 22, the final chapter of Out of the Silent Planet. If you remember, we talked about last week on Ransom's return trip back from Melikandra to Earth. There was just a little chip, a little slight crack through the third wall there that mentioned something to the effect of, I'm not allowed to record the conversation, and that referring to the conversation between Ransom and Oyarsa right before he left. And we thought, well, that's kind of odd. That's weird, huh? Anyway, moving on. And now we see, yes, this has all been a recording that Ransom has landed and connected with the author. And they've discussed this. He shared the story. And so this work that we're reading is the work of the author and Ransom kind of together. And that's what this chapter deals with, is how this came to be and why this came to be.
So, Gabe, what stood out to you? Do you want to do this chronologically, or do you want to jump around and point out stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can jump around, because I kind of like the big picture, boom, that's what it is. Right. How this came to be, why it came to be, the end. Chronologically, I don't know that it matters too much. So we can jump around for sure. I think what stood out to me is that the why this came to be.
Yeah.
So
it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So Ransom, it's revealed that this is not his real name, that the names have been changed to protect the innocent, right? And in some cases, the not so innocent, in the case of Weston. Mm-hmm. But that the author and Ransom have chosen to put this work out there to influence culture, to change minds, to change hearts, to get people to start to see and think in a different way about heaven, about space, about the relationship with the cosmic world. And the idea was that if it were nonfiction, it would not be received at all. It would be just completely dismissed and swatted away. Mm-hmm. But if it were fiction, then maybe it could have some degree of influence, and the right people would be able to see the truth that is actually revealed in this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminded me of, unfortunately, how we see this a lot of times with sin and you know, C.S. Lewis, the Screwtape Letters, you know, kind of twisting it. Now, thankfully, in this one, it's much more in a positive light that we've read to understand the goodness of Melikandra and of what Ransom saw and experienced and told in a story form, so people could just buy into the story. But there's always a message with every story. And, you know, unfortunately, we see a lot of messages that are sinful, that are negative, in our real world culture, also Screwtape Letters and every facet. That's the word I'm looking for. But here we see that, you know, it's a lot easier to feed someone something or to send a message when it's put in a story form or in a quote unquote fictionalized way. I remember listening to a podcast with Alton Brown, a famous celebrity food cook guy. He had a quote on his desk that said, a laughing brain is more absorbent. And it's so true. When I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so true. Because when you and that's probably why, unfortunately, priests and deacons always feel like they have to give a cheesy joke at the beginning of their homilies, where you're just kind of cringing, laughing, but it's not really funny. But they're trying to tap into that. If you're laughing, you're more relaxed, you're more open, and you can hear the message of what I'm trying to tell you.
It's disarming, right? Yeah. So I'm looking at the text here, and there's a quote or a line that stands out. It's from Ransom talking to the author, and just about what we're talking about. And he says, "What we need for the moment is not so much a body of belief as a body of people familiarized with certain ideas." That's what they're going after. Just they're going after the hearts of people. To begin to influence and shape the way people see things. And so, like you're saying, fiction has been a way for them to disarm people, to soften them, to allow them to receive the truth, right? The transcendental of truth that cuts through all, for them to be able to see the truth and receive it and be more open to it. So yeah, that's why they've gone this route.
There are two things that stood out to me. One is, as you were saying earlier, about the Weston character, or the man that we call Weston, and how he'll play a very important part into, you know, teasing the next two books, which makes sense because Orosa, as I pointed out, you know, that really stood out to me, and here it's being played again, and then, you know, the part where it says the dangers to be feared are not planetary but cosmic. And not temporal, but eternal.
Yes. Yes. That stood out too. And he said that they're weary of Weston. And this stood out to me, just to touch on what you're saying, were the force or forces behind Weston.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And so, you know, if I'm making a prediction, which I'll kind of tease now, and then maybe I'll think on it and expound more for our finale. I think that is what the driving force of the remaining series is going to be for the second and third book. Definitely in the second book, but I could also see him maybe setting things up in the second and then going into the third.
Maybe for climax. A final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then the final thing, you know, again, being a philosopher, talking about Plato and Aristotle and all that, all this good stuff. And It was interesting. What did you think of the very end here? And I'll just set it, you know, he says, you know, for the later stages of the adventure, well, as Aristotle would put it, that is another story. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes you want to go on to the next. Because what they're saying is, you know, before we could even put all this to fruition, like, things happened faster than we could expect. Mm-hmm. And it basically kind of rendered this out of date, not necessarily useless, right? Obviously, because they've still obviously gone ahead and published something.
Mm-hmm. But things are already gone and moved on.
They absolutely, yeah. that we're on to the next pieces of this. And so, but you know what? All that is another story, which is like, oh, what is that? Man, it for me, it was just a great hook to draw you in deeper to this adventure, that this is not over. That if anything, this is just beginning.
Exactly. And that's why, again, I know I sound like a broken record, but this is why, if they had epilogues back in the day, this is why this is prime for epilogue-iness, just to put that bait out there to just like, oh, I can't wait till the second book comes out. Where's the second book? I want to pull it out of my bookshelf. I want to go buy it. I want to go get it. Yeah, I mean, that's really about it, because, I mean, like I said, it's only 2.5 pages long.
Yeah, no, it's very brief. I think the only thing that I would want to touch on very, very briefly is, sure, is, since we've talked a lot about the why and kind of a little bit beyond that, but not really about the how. And so I guess on the how.
How as in how the two got together?
Exactly how this has come to pass.
Yeah,
that Ransom has a relationship to some degree with the author. Mm-hmm. The author works with language and philology and things to that effect. And so Ransom, being a philologist, has interacted with this guy, and, you know, and perhaps they've had questions back and forth, or just a professional relationship of some kind. And so it's in this that the author reaches out to Ransom and says, "Hey, you know, I'd love your thoughts on this thing. We were working on this and came across a word that we haven't seen before, and would love to hear what you think about this. The word is Oyarsis." And like, that was it. That was the trigger. Apparently Ransom had resolved to just dismiss everything and to like let it go in the past and move on. But when that came and hit him like a ton of bricks, his response was, "You know what? We need to get together."
Sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say, that's another really key part as far as Ransom. I forgot about this until you just said it, was him getting really sick when he got back home. So yes, that's, he was even doubting himself. He's like, maybe it was a fever dream I was having, and yeah, I can't even trust myself if this was real.
And if I have any degree of doubt, then how's anyone going to believe me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that really just kind of put a damper on him, you know, making his Malachandran dictionary or, you know, anything else that he was going to do. Like, I was like, oh, forget it. I'll just move on and move forward. But then, you know, this guy reaches out to him and says, "Hey, yeah, do you know anything about this word, Oyarsis?" And of course, Ransom knows a great deal about that word.
I just see him popping up like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Just draws him back in, and they get together, and over the course of who knows how long, they get on the same page. They discuss this. They're doing all kinds of research and digging, and they're like, you know what, we've got to get this story out. And that then gets into the how and the why of why they went the route like we talked about. But yeah, I didn't want to totally ignore that.
No, absolutely. I mean, obviously being such a small chapter, that's a big chunk of it. And that's the whole reason why we even have this chapter is by that, how, by connecting those two to draw them into what will propel us into the second book, hopefully. At least that's what I assume.
You know what? And by breaking that third wall and introducing the character of the author, it is expanded the universe, right? We have a new character now that the next book may involve him to some degree, as they go forward together on this adventure of stopping Weston or the forces behind Weston.
Yeah. I have a couple of thoughts on that. I'm going to save it for next week. I'm going to save it. I'm still mulling over. I'll tell you now, when I first read this chapter and I saw it immediately, you know, obviously because it's revealed immediately, I was not happy with it. I wasn't happy with the choice. It's slowly growing on me. And that one of the biggest compelling reasons is exactly what you just said, which is it only expands it. It gives you another character for C.S. Lewis to build and to grow within this universe. I was going to say the cinematic universe, but it's not a movie. Yeah, no. That's another thing we'll talk about next week. I obviously haven't read the other two books, so I don't know how crazy it is, but with our technology and capabilities now, I'm surprised no one's tried to tackle at least this first book as a movie, but we'll cross that for next week. My first was like, I don't know. I kind of liked being the fly on the wall throughout the whole book, and now all of a sudden you're ripping it from, you know, ripping that Band-Aid off of me. But anyways, I digress.
You know, it's amazing because when you start to think about what this book actually is, and that's, you know, the story shared and told by the author and Ransom, you start to think, well, first of all, we're hearing what Ransom could remember, you know, to a degree, but also what they deemed, you know, whatever made sense to share, because surely like not everything, it would be impossible to share everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I suppose how much more was there, you know, how much more of this experience, more of just the life on Malachandra, the dealings of Weston and Divine and putting up with them. Like, it just, it's interesting to think about, you know,
and obviously tying in with Christianity, with the Bible, it made me think of that too, of, you know, how you hear through the author what someone else is saying, experiencing, and yes, names were changed, and for the sake of, you know, protection and everything else. But like you said, it's how much was left on the, you know, on the floor, the cutting mm-hmm. board, the editing table, if you will. And, you know, similar with sacred scripture, like, and with any story for that matter, right? It's okay. What is the story still intact, or have we cut something vital to the story? And so, you know, going through the Gospels like we are on Friday, you know, right now we're just going through Matthew's interpretation. And that's the thing too, like, we've only gotten the story through Ransom's point of view. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear anything what happened to Divine or Weston's, what happened to them during all that right. time, what's right. going on with their point of view. Mm-hmm. But that's not the point
right.
of
right.
the story.
Right. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Excited to reread the postscript and have a post-game wrap up with you next week. And please join us. I had the chance to meet one of our listeners. I didn't even know he was listening.
Nice.
Until earlier this week. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow, hey, thanks. So thank you, all of you out there who do listen. We really appreciate it. I can't tell you how much we're thankful for you and that we think of you, pray for you, and are just, again, thankful that you are choosing to spend some time with us each week, whether it be just with Out of the Silent Planet or on any of the other episodes that we put out through the week. Just a big thank you. And yeah, man, I think that's going to pretty much do it for me.
Yeah, that'll do it for both of us. You can check out all of our info at readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm, and that's where you can join us. Feel free to leave any comments, questions for us. You know, if you're listening and you would like for us to discuss anything about the first book, if you have any questions for Gabe or I or both of us, by all means, please send it to us on our website, and we'd love to hear from y'all and maybe even answer some questions on next week's podcast. So until the next one, love you, bye.
Love you, bye.